With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to New Books and Biography, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Mark Klobis, your host for the channel. Today I'm speaking with Kat D. Williams, author of the book Isabel Lefty Alvarez, The Improbable Life of a Cuban-American Baseball Star. Kat, welcome to the New Books Network.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you're welcome. It's nice to have you on our show. I was wondering if you could start us off by telling our listeners something about yourself.
Sure. I am a college professor at Marshall University, and while that's my full-time paid job, I'm also the president of the International Women's Baseball Center, which is my unpaid full-time job and my first love. So I'm pretty absorbed in both the history and the present of baseball.
What was it that led you to write a biography about this remarkable woman? I mean, what was that that drew you to her, and what was it about her life that really stood out to you as deserving of a full-length book?
Right. Well, in 2003, I went to a reunion of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League Players Association. Most people are aware of this league because they saw the 1992 movie A League of Their Own. They have a players association and have had since the 80s. And every year they would have a reunion and members could come. It was always a lot of fun. Well, I was told about this in 2003 when I was at Cooperstown at the Hall of Fame doing some research. And so I was really nervous about going. I didn't know any of these women. And after all, you know, it's like I felt like I was intruding. But I went. It was in Syracuse. It was the 60th anniversary of the league. And one of the first people I met was this short sort of bubbly woman that came running up to me and said, "Hey, do you know where Jane is?" in with an accent. And I'm looking at her like, "What?" And that was Lefty. And I said, "I don't know Jane." And she said, "Oh, holy cow, there she is." And she took off running across the lobby. And I'm standing there thinking, and I'm telling my age here, you know, I'm old enough to remember Candid Camera. So I was sitting there thinking, or standing there in the lobby thinking, "Oh my God, what just happened?" That was my first introduction to Lefty, but then I very quickly we became friends, and I just one story after another just kept it. I was amazed, and so then several people kept saying, "You know, you should really set her down and have her tell you about her life in Cuba. Did you know? And you know, did you know this?" And so I did that. And one of the former ball players, Maybelle Blair, who is also a very dear friend of mine, finally suggested to me, and I use the word suggested loosely, it was more of a demand, "Kat, you need to write this book. You need to tell Lefty's story." And so at the same time, I had finished my first book, and I wanted a way to dig into the stories of those players, but not just tell another history of a regular biography of a baseball player. And so Lefty's life was and is just an amazing story of strength and courage and determination. And baseball's pretty much, sports in general and baseball in particular, are pretty much the, it's kind of the vehicle, really, that we use to tell her story more than it is the primary piece of the story. But I became just enamored. I was amazed by her story, and I felt like it was one that could and should be told.
I found it such an amazing story. Not, you know, the base, her career in baseball was really fascinating, but it was also fascinating to read about, you have her as this, as a mid 20th century American immigrant, you know, what it was that drew her to America, the challenges that she faced in coming to America, the family dynamics that were at play in coming to America in terms of propelling her, and also the emotional strain that of what she left behind. And it was also fascinating, in some ways representative, and in some ways also very unique.
Yeah, it really was. And that was one of the things that was so compelling about this story for me. I have always, for some reason, I have no connection to Cuba, but I have always been interested and intrigued. So I have always sort of, you know, read some of the history, followed along, just amazed by the culture. And of course, as most people know, or many people know, Cuba is a baseball crazy country. And so so I thought, you know, this is a really interesting way into this story. Why is Cuba so in love with baseball? What does that mean for male, for boys? What does it mean for girls? And then I started asking myself those larger questions. And as I got to know Lefty a little more, and I started to find out about her life and her background in Cuba, I thought, oh my God, this is just such an amazing way to tell that history through the lens of this young girl. Her father was what she called, and this is her language, a policeman under the regime of dictator Batista. Later, her brother fought with Castro. And so what happens in between there is a family torn apart by Cuban politics and a way that men are supposed to be and women are supposed to be. And baseball really was in the middle of that. So when one of the things that I do in the book at the beginning, and this was in part due to Lefty's urging, I really talk pretty detailed about the history of Cuba. This is not a history book about Cuba, but I wanted to put Lefty in that context because she, as she says, she is a product of her country. She is a product of the fact that she lived under Batista's regime and then didn't. And so she is a good example. They were not a wealthy family. Her mother was determined. Her mother grew up very poor. Her father, on the other hand, had been adopted by a fairly wealthy Catholic priest. So Lefty is convinced that her mother married her father for money. But her mother had this passion, almost unbelievably forceful passion to make Lefty, quote, middle class. And that's, believe it or not, how Lefty got into sports. Her mother was trying desperately, in the context of all this change and all this turmoil, and in that context, in Cuba, in Havana, her mother is trying desperately to make sure Lefty, a girl in Cuba, would have other opportunities. And to me, that's the focal point of this story. It's using sports, not just, she happened to be a baseball player.
And as you describe, the challenges that that Lefty faced were in terms, a lot of them were dictated by the terms of the time, the attitudes about educating girls that were held not just by the men, but also by her mother. But you also describe how her mother was trying to find these outlets that were appropriate for women, specifically of women of upper class, but they weren't just sports. You describe how she entered Lefty into beauty pageants. She was really trying to find Lefty's niche, and I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah, it really was. And in fact, some of those, some of that really turned out to be just horrifying for Lefty, but anyone that picks up the cover of this book will see on the front that Lefty was and still is incredibly beautiful. When she was a young girl, her mother, again, as you say, finding it any way she possibly could to get Lefty out of what her mother saw was going to be a similar life to the one that she had. She entered her into a beauty contest, and Lefty, you know, in telling the story, she's laughing. She said, you know, she put me in a pretty dress and she walked me in. Before I started to go up on stage, she stuffed things in my bra. And she said, and here's Lefty as a kid at this point, she's like 14. And so she had no interest. And by the way, she came in second in that beauty contest. But her mother also, while she wanted Lefty to have an opportunity for something else, she did see that, yeah, maybe that's not the best way to go. But unfortunately, she also was misguided. One of the things that she did was set up this, quote, interview with a guy that ran a radio show. Now, keeping in mind, again, Lefty is quite beautiful. She's a young girl at this time, at this point. I don't know exactly her age. I know she was 13 or 14. Her mother sent her off to this radio station to do an interview for a job. Now, Lefty is unsure what kind of job her mother thought she was going to get at 13 or 14. But again, she was trying desperately to find a niche. Unfortunately, what happened was that Lefty was what we would call it by today's term, sexually harassed by this man. And Lefty began to sort of internalize that. And so it wasn't that her mother was trying to sell her body, wasn't trying to sell her off. It's almost as if she just didn't quite get it. And there were other situations like that where her mother would say, here, go do this. Go to this dentist. Let me give you, you know, we don't have any money, but you go to the dentist. Well, again, the same thing happens. Eventually, though, she does realize, her mother realizes that Lefty is, first of all, she's always out in the street playing some sort of sport. She's climbing trees or she's playing sports. She's playing baseball in the street with her brother and all the other kids in the neighborhood. And finally, her mother realizes, oh, wait a minute. She's a really good athlete. And so her mother tries sports. It's not baseball because there are, again, remember, her mother's primary goal is middle class. So there are certain sports, and that's true today, that we associate with upper class or middle class. For example, it might be golf
Tennis.
Or tennis, exactly. And so her mother, keeping that in mind, it wasn't necessarily golf or tennis there, but it was fencing, for example. Lefty said, my mother picked me up one day and took me to a gym where this man taught me how to fence. And she said that I should learn how to fence. And she said, so I did. And there's a picture in the book of Lefty fencing. There was also volleyball was something that girls and women played. Soccer. She was a very, very good athlete. In fact, she told me one of her favorite sports all along was volleyball. But again, her mother was trying to control what sport she played, not out on the street, but any kind of organized sport, because she didn't want it to be something that was considered or might be considered lower class.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Now until May 12th, get up to 30% off personalized jewelry, style, decor, and so many other items mom will love. And if you want her to know you put a ton of thought into her present, use Gift Mode. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can easily find well-crafted, original, and affordable pieces from small shops. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about mom, and Gift Mode instantly gives you curated ideas based on hundreds of personas. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
I feel like this is a good point to talk a bit about the place of baseball in Cuba in the 1930s and 1940s. Why was it that it was not necessarily the first sport that that Lefty's mother thought about? And what was it ultimately that made it such a better opportunity for Lefty than, say, sticking with volleyball or fencing or right. some other sport?
Sure, sure. Well, baseball was brought back to Cuba in the late 1890s by two Cuban men who had come to the U.S. to play, had come to the U.S. for college. And from that moment, baseball was, you know, they ultimately called it the passion of the island. Like, this is, they took to that sport. They loved that sport throughout the various attempts at revolution and in attempts to gain independence from Spain. Baseball became this place, this location where revolutionaries or individuals fighting to bring about some political change in Cuba, baseball was this place where they met. It was a kind of a working class. Everybody played it. And it became a sport of revolution. It became a sport of change. And one of the things that started to happen was that Cubans started to play the game of baseball in huge, huge numbers. And what that meant was that then they were no longer flocking to the sports that the Spanish considered acceptable, for example, bullfighting. So ultimately, the Spanish at one point outlawed baseball in Cuba. They said, nope, no more baseball. You've got to, you know, we want to make sure that it was a means of control. So baseball had always sort of been this grassroots connection to Cuba, to Cuban culture. And as I said, Lefty played it on the street. And you know, Lefty's mother was not one to, oh yes, we're going to fight for independence. Let's get behind those rebels. Not that she was political in that way. So baseball to her was, and now let me just say, she loved baseball. That's the other piece of this. Her mother loved baseball, but she didn't necessarily see it as something for Lefty. She didn't necessarily see it for something that would get Lefty out of Cuba or out of poverty. But Lefty continued to play it, and she was clearly very good. In 1947, the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League went to Havana for spring training. So their spring training was different than what we think of for Major League Baseball. They would go to, for until 47, they had gone to Mississippi and they'd gone to some other southern states, and all the players would go and they would have spring training and then they would disperse to their hometowns. What they wanted to do a spring training in Cuba in 1947, this is also the year and at the same time that Jackie Robinson was appearing in spring training for the first time with Major League Baseball. And so Lefty's mother somehow got wind of the fact that the All-Americans were coming. And in anticipation of that, a businessman in Cuba. We believe he probably had business connections to Philip Wrigley, the owner of the All-Americans League. He began a Cuban women's team patterned after the All-Americans. And the thought was that he would put this team together. They'd have the same kind of uniforms, you know, wear the dress and the same rules. He'd put this team together and they would play the All-Americans when they got there. They would play exhibition games. Well, Lefty's mother got wind of this. And one day Lefty was out on the street playing ball. And her brother said, Mama wants you to come to the house. She's taking you someplace. She took Lefty to this tryout and she made the team. De Leon was the businessman. He was a wine merchant and he had the girls live at his ranch for a while and he trained them. And Lefty made his team. And that uniform that she's wearing on the cover of the book is the uniform for the Cubanas. So her mother, she loved the game of baseball, but for her, it didn't seem like an opportunity. But then when it became an opportunity, she was all in. She got Lefty there. Lefty made a huge impression on De Leon. And, you know, the rest, as they say, is history.
One of the things that fascinated me was your description of the early phase of Lefty's experience with professional baseball, because she doesn't go straight to America. She goes on this tour. And it's just fascinating to think about how, especially at a time when you had air travel, but it was generally the province of the wealthy and the professional, that she as a kid, I mean, she's not even 17 at that point, is getting on a plane, flying to Nicaragua, and she ends up dancing with the dictator of Nicaragua.
I know. It's a crazy story. This was apparently, and of course the days too, it's hard for us to imagine this now, but the planes of course were relatively small. And you could sit up with the pilot, you could get on. And so a couple of times, particularly because she was young and, you know, a little nervous. And so a couple of times, you know, she tells the story of being able to sit up on a box near the pilot. She said, you know, the first time, she walked up the steps holding a suitcase. She walked up the steps to a plane and got on. She never looked back. She doesn't know what her mother was doing or saying. And one can only imagine she sent Lefty off at age 15 for Pete's sake. Mm-hmm. But she went. You know, it's one thing for, and I'm not I don't have children, so I can't really understand what this must be like, but you know, it's one thing to be a parent and send your 15-year-old daughter off to play baseball in the 1940s, but it's another thing to be 15. She spoke no English, by the way. Now, in the Latin American tour, that clearly wasn't as much of an issue, except that in trying to converse with the All-Americans. But she spoke no English. She was 15. She had never been out of Havana. And here she is. You know, they played baseball in Nicaragua and El Salvador, and she danced at the palace with Somoza. It's like, you know, this is almost seems unreal. And the first time she told me the story about dancing with Somoza, I'm like, really? Really? You know, and so I thought, you know, because sometimes it's a little hard to follow Lefty. She you know, she's like her mind, and I get this because mine's much the same, is a little bit like a pinball, you know, boing, boing, boing. But I said, well, okay. So then we went on talking about something else and we came back to that. And I said, you really did? She said, yeah. And so later, as I interviewed other people and I read more about that, that was true. And I just was blown away by it. And if you didn't really poke and prod Lefty, you'd never know that. You'd never know it. For her, it was part of a bigger journey of playing baseball. But that Latin American tour, the point behind it really was a business one. It was a business decision. Meyerowitz, who took over the All-Americans after Wrigley stepped away, had hopes of expanding the league, and that ultimately did not happen. But for many of those women, it was an amazing experience, and certainly for Lefty.
So how did that experience translate into Lefty's involvement with the All-Americans and her joining one of the teams of the All-Americans and playing baseball in the United States?
Well, when she first tried out and first played in that in those exhibition games in 1947, the manager came to Lefty's house and talked to her mother and said, look, she's a really good ball player. We'd like to offer her a contract to come to America to play. But she's a little too young. So, which is really interesting when you think about it, she's too young to come to the United States to play, but not too young to go off on a tour of Latin America. But so they said to her, you know, in another year, we'll sign a contract and then she can come to the U.S. to play. So, Lefty was. She was excited, but not nearly as excited as her mother, I think. And that meant she had a year to prepare, and she played exhibition games and things like that. But when the time came, she actually traveled to the U.S. with three other Cuban players, which was wonderful. One of them spoke a little bit of English, and Lefty being the youngest, they kind of took her under her wing a little bit, but she... Again, she tells a similar story. She had a suitcase and the glove that De Leon had given her because she had never had a baseball glove before. And she walked up those steps. She got on that plane and she said, I never look back. I never look back. And two things that she always came back to, two memories, was seeing the tall buildings in Chicago. And then the other one was she was met there. And it was spring of the year. She was met there by a family that she had never met, with a coat, and Lefty had never had a coat. So there were these two. Just when you think about it, it's so innocent, you know, it's so innocent and so almost childlike. But yeah, she got off that plane and walked out onto the baseball field.
So. Was she playing in league straight away? And what sort of role was she playing on the teams on which she was assigned?
Well, she Lefty was almost immediately assigned to. There were two teams, the Chicago Colleens and the Springfield Sallies, that were what they called like practice teams or rookie leagues, something like that. And she was on the Colleens. And so one of the things that, and that was really good because, again, she was young, she was, she was inexperienced. And so it was good for her to be with a group of players that were also a little bit younger. Now, again, the language was a huge issue. But Lefty was a pitcher, and she was a good pitcher. She also played some other positions, but for the most part, she was a pitcher, hence the nickname Lefty. And by the way, I refer to her as Lefty because that was her request. When I met her, I was introduced to her as Lefty. And when I started writing this book, I asked her, do you want me to refer to you as Isabel or Lefty? And she thought about it for a minute and she said, no, my teammates gave me the nickname Lefty and that's really who I am. So call me Lefty. So that's why I refer to her as Lefty. But Lefty was a good ball player. She was not a superstar. But even on the Colleens, she did a good job. You know, she played pretty regularly. And then she was transferred to, the Fort Wayne, Daisies, and Fort Wayne was kind of quote the big leagues, and she loved Fort Wayne. In fact, that's where she still lives, is Fort Wayne. So Lefty was, again, not a superstar, but she was a if not an everyday player, a player that she pitched pretty often. Her stats are included in the book.
I found when I was reading about her baseball career, there was this element of tragedy in it, in the sense that you describe how she goes to Fort Wayne, and it's she maybe goes a little bit young because you describe that the drop off in her statistics, but it seemed that she was developing. She's still in her early 20s, but her arrival in the league coincides with as you're pointing out, Meyerowitz sells the league. It has its various business fluctuations, and then the whole thing ends. In the beginning of 1955.
Right, right. Yeah, it is somewhat tragic. In a way, I think if what we're doing is looking at this through the lens only of a baseball career, it is. She played, the league ended in 1954, and Lefty was had been injured, and therefore was unable to be on the field for the last game, the All-Star game. But Fort Wayne was home, but also, and I don't just mean the city, I mean that team, those people, those fans, the host family, the Blees that she lived with, and ultimately friends that she ended up living with after the league ended. Lefty injured her leg and was in the hospital for a while. Again, this is another one of those stories where when she was telling me the story, I had to really dig and think about it and ask more questions. She insisted that she was in traction for 2 months, and that just didn't make sense to me. But and I still don't know exactly what the medical what exactly was happening, but she was in the hospital for quite a while. So her career ended really before the league ended in 1954, and she was able to watch the All-Star game, the last game, from the stands. But she did not have that rags to riches poor kid becomes the all-star baseball player kind of story. In fact, it was difficult. There was a year when her contract did not make it to Cuba. All of the foreign or the foreign-born or the foreign players had to have a contract to get back into the country each year. They had to go after the season, during the offseason, they had to go back. There were four players from Cuba, but there were a number of players from Canada, and all of them had to go back home after the season was over, and they couldn't get back in without a contract. And this 1 year, Lefty didn't get a contract, and her mother was devastated. So what she did was take an old contract, change the date on it, put Lefty on a plane along with one of the other Cuban ball players, and sent Lefty to the United States without a legitimate contract. Now, I don't really know exactly what she thought Lefty was going to do when she got there, but what Lefty did do was sort of hang out in Fort Wayne, and that's where she met Kathy Blee and the Blee family, and ultimately they are the ones who helped her get a green card and ultimately citizenship. As it turns out, she did get a contract. They did mail her a contract, but it was lost in the mail. Lefty's career, baseball career, is not your typical superstar story.
So she is in America when the league comes to an end. How is it that she's able to remain? And how does she reorient her life without the opportunity of the All-American League?
Yeah, it's actually was very hard. She had worked a couple of jobs. The one way that she got out of going back to Cuba in the off season that last year or so was that the Blees helped her get a green card, and so she could stay in the U.S. And so she had worked some jobs, like at a drive-in restaurant, and some things like that. But she had no desire to go back to Cuba. She really did not. And in fact, her mother sort of encouraged her not to go back. But so she stayed and she worked. She lived with the Blees, and she continued to play organized softball. Now, As I said, Lefty was just a good athlete. And so there were many people, if you're familiar with softball leagues in local areas, you're probably familiar with Turner's and Turner's Fields. And so she played competitive softball on a women's league and played at the local Turner's Field there in Fort Wayne and was very competitive. That kept her connected to a sport, but she also picked up some pretty bad habits. She started drinking a lot, and she was kind of lost. She worked some jobs, but, you know, nothing that really she could sink her teeth into. Mr. Blee was a manager or something at the local General Electric plant. And despite Lefty's attempt to get a high school high school equivalency course, she only had a sixth grade education. And so finding a job that would be a real, a job where she could really take care of herself was difficult. But Mr. Blee put in a word for Lefty, and she did indeed get a job at the General Electric plant, where she worked for 33 years. And so she worked on the assembly line at GE, which gave her that financial stability that she needed, but she and continued to play softball, but she continued to drink a lot. She tells some pretty scary stories about, driving into cornfields, not remembering how she got home, not really having a place to live, and she would stay with friends. And that transitional period, that period from, say, 55 to the mid 80s was a very, very difficult time for Lefty. And ultimately it was getting reunited with her teammates from the All-Americans that really saved her.
Yeah, I find it a remarkable period because you're right that it's a very difficult period. And yet, think about it from a different perspective. She's a single woman at a time when there was a lot of unique challenges that single women faced. She was working full time in a job. It was, she had those challenges, but at the same time, she had that success. She was able to make. She didn't have to go back to Cuba. She didn't have to. She didn't end up in a potentially much worse situation. She really persevered to that point where she was able to connect it with and participate in that revival that takes place in the 1980s.
Yeah, it really, in interviewing her, talking about that period, that quote, difficult period, she's ashamed. And I attempted to approach conversations with her from the point of view that you just stated, because as I said to her, I mean, I understand, we all have a youth, right? We all have things that we wish we hadn't done or just feel grateful we survived. And so, I really attempted to, if nothing else, help her to see that, what that demonstrates is your strength and your courage and your determination. And I don't know that I was successful in doing that for her, but I hope it comes across in the readers, to the readers, because ultimately one of the things that happens is it was Lefty who said, I am not being my baseball self, as she called it. I am not being my best self. And if I'm not, if I'm not being my best self, my baseball self, I can't possibly be around my old teammates. And she felt like that was when she found out that in the mid 80s they were going to put together a reunion. She straightened up and she said, "I gotta be my baseball self," and that is so directly connected to my idea of sport identity. It's like that thing in you that I can rely on that. And she did. She quit drinking. She quote, straightened herself up and she walked into that first reunion and she was a different person than she had been the previous, 15 years or whatever.
So, you have that moment where she has that reconnection. What does that association with the league, the community that comes together in the 1980s, what does that do for her, and what is her involvement with it over the next several decades?
Well, as I said, just the thought that she was gonna see them kind of, you know, pulled her up short and suggested she needed to do something different. And then she walked into that lobby and those women just embraced her and loved her and lefty. And as soon as she opened her mouth, they knew who she was. And she was so proud. And so they started, the Players Association started with this one big reunion. And then they really worked to create an actual nonprofit organization and to have smaller reunions throughout. Well, one of the next reunions they were planning was going to be in Fort Wayne. And Lefty, a number of folks there in Fort Wayne were either former players. There was a Bat Girl. There were some folks who had just been friends of Players, things like that. And they included Lefty in this committee, in this group of people to plan. So she was able to throw herself into that. And that was another way that she could connect to her, as she called it, baseball self. Those are her, that's her family. That's who she relies on and who she can, that's where she's comfortable. So she becomes involved in the planning of some of the earlier reunions. And then the Players Association continued to grow and they continued to have a yearly reunions. And she was always at the reunions. Lefty became kind of a local celebrity in Fort Wayne. The movie A League of Their Own came out in 1992. Many of the players were involved in either the filming or advising Penny Marshall or whatever. And if people have seen the movie A League of Their Own, at the end there is a reunion game. The old players come back to the Hall of Fame when the women are being recognized at the Hall of Fame. Well, Lefty is in one of those scenes, and so the movie premiered in 92, and she was, of course, still working on the assembly line at GE. And the movie came out, and she, you know, had been out for a while, and it was becoming very popular or whatever. And she turned to some of her coworkers, and she said, you know that movie about the baseball team? Oh, yeah. Well, I was one of those players. No, you weren't. Yes, I was. No, you weren't. And so she had to convince them. And she said, yeah, I'm in the movie. I'm at the end. And so then she became, and this is true for a lot of those players, they became like local celebrities. So, you know, there are all these pictures and these stories now, like on the 4th of July parade or the Labor Day parade in Fort Wayne, Lefty sitting on the back of a convertible waving at everybody in the parade. And, you know, so it gave Lefty, it gave her that connection back to baseball, but it also gave her a sense of accomplishment that she had really worked her whole life to find.
Hmm. Well, we've taken up a lot of your time, but before we go, could you tell us what you're working on now?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I am currently working on a project about Edith Houghton. For those who are baseball fans, you might know Edith Houghton. She was the first woman to be hired as a baseball scout for the Philadelphia Phillies, but she was also with a team called the Philadelphia Bobbies in 1925. She was a young kid. The Philadelphia Bobbies went off to Japan to play exhibition games, and due to some mismanagement of money and some other issues, many of the players on the team got left in Japan. This is a long and very sad story, but Edith Houghton was indeed, and she has passed away, but she was indeed a baseball superstar and quite an interesting story from age 10 to when she passed away at 103. she was quite an important figure in women's baseball.
Well, it sounds like a great project. And when you're done with it, I hope we can have you back on the podcast to talk about it.
Oh, I'd love that. That'd be great. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for agreeing to be on our podcast today, Kat. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.